please consider leaving a 5-star review on your favourite podcasting platform. It only takes a minute and your feedback is greatly appreciated. Reviews help other people find the show and learn about the amazing topics we cover. Additionally, please turn on notifications so you never miss an episode. And finally, please subscribe or follow the T2 Hubcast if you haven't already. Doing this means that you'll automatically receive new episodes as soon as they're released. Thanks so much for your support.
Welcome to the T2 Hubcast with me, Spencer Locker.
And me, Tracy Roberts.
Morning, Tracy.
Good morning to you.
Are you good?
I am well.
And you know what? I was particularly excited this morning because I knew we were coming into a podcast. However, I have absolutely no idea what it's all about. Ooh. So this was the cloak and dagger bit. Not necessarily a particularly secretive thing, but... Well, you'll see on Monday, Spence. All right, okay.
And those who know Spence know he doesn't like surprises that much. He likes to be able to plan. But knowing Spence as I do, I know he's the right man to step into the booth with me this morning because he'll be treating this with sensitivity and that's what I needed.
Oh, right, okay.
Okay, so we're going to talk about something that needs to be spoken about more.
Right.
We're going to talk about navigating the menopause maze.
Right. Now,
That is shifting in his chair a little bit.
I'm shifting my chair a little bit now because that was really sort of timely and sort of relevant because... So I did a session not that long ago, last couple of months, with an exclusively female group of delegates. And you know what we're like at T2, and we sort of go off piste a little bit. It's all relevant. Yeah. It's there to do make a point, but we don't necessarily. We're not a script sort of thing. So I was talking to these ladies, and I was trying to sort of explain a certain concept or explain a situation or something. Mm. And I sort of said, look, I'm going to talk about the M word. Mm. It was about the menopause, and yes. We're talking about a situation, and we're talking about and it went down all right. It went down all right. I called it the M word because, let's face facts here, I'm a man.
Yes.
All the EDI stuff that we've been doing, yes. And all this and the other. I just thought I didn't want to sort of go steaming in as though I knew what I was talking about because I obviously don't.
You were showing empathy.
I was showing empathy, trying to show a little bit of sort of being a little bit tactful.
Okay.
And the feedback from that session was, one of the feedback was, I understand what Spencer was trying to do. However, if he calls it the M word, it's always going to be a thing that we've scared to talk about. So we need to talk about more often.
Yeah.
So, and I get that. I fully appreciate that.
And did it make you think in the moment?
Very much so. Yeah.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because it is a subject that, I guess, until maybe the last couple of years, we didn't really talk about. We didn't talk about openly anyway, but we certainly didn't talk about it in the workplace, did we? And I think what's been interesting about that is if you're thinking generations gone by, you know, I just think about, you know, my parents' generation, their parents' generation definitely wasn't something that we shared. It was very taboo, almost a joke. I think, you know, from a female perspective, maybe quite frustrating because I think a lot of women that I speak to that talk about going through this, and we're obviously going to talk about it in a little bit more detail, and I guess it's their experience of it, isn't it? It's you know, it's a long period of time in your life where things just don't feel in your control. So, of course, we've got to talk about it. And if we don't talk about it openly, then we're not going to, like you say, educate. We're not going to get the support that we need. And essentially, we're not going to become invisible. I sometimes say this to people when you get to a certain point in life, and it usually is about midlife for some women. And this is comments I hear a lot from people I coach. They feel a little bit invisible because they don't feel like they can talk about these things And, you know, because they're at that period of their life where they don't feel in their prime, so to speak, then they do tend to shrink a little. And that does affect their confidence. So for me, it's really important that we speak about this. And I've got my own reasons for that as well. But just to kind of set people's minds at ease, we're not going to tackle this in one podcast. We're going to take sections of some of the education around this and the things that we, you know, we advise and that we recommend. And we're going to take it into a bit of a series of a podcast. So yeah, this is the first of many, hopefully.
Oh, excellent. I'm looking forward to being educated and enlightened. And I have my own reasons.
But
I mean, obviously, every day is a learning day. And I think that if you're one of these people now who is reeling a little bit from what Tracy's just said, and you're thinking to yourself, well, it's about the menopause, why should I listen? It doesn't affect me, so why should I listen? Actually, I think you're the one who needs to listen to this.
You need to sit up and listen, for sure. And the thing is, there's so many myths around the menopause. What we're not here to do today is to educate you around all the kind of medical aspects of it, but we're going to talk about the symptoms a little bit, for sure. But what I wanted to start with was a bit of myth-busting.
Myth-busting?
Yeah.
What, women of a certain age?
Oh, yeah, exactly that. But let's do it properly.
Okay.
So I've written down top 5 myths.
Okay.
And see if you can go with me on this. So the first myth, after doing research, was that menopause happens suddenly and at a specific age.
Yes. Yeah.
And I think that does seem to be a generalisation. I'm going to just say this. Some men do have that opinion because they don't necessarily understand how it works. Why that's frustrating for me is that there's a longer kind of piece of the jigsaw that we need to consider, which is that menopause doesn't happen at a specific age. It's very different for each individual. And what we don't talk about is perimenopause.
Mm.
And perimenopause is actually, for some women, actually rougher than menopause itself, because they don't actually realise that's what it is until quite far down the line. They're questioning their, I don't know, themselves. They're probably going to the doctors with lots of different symptoms and not getting any response. Probably think they're going crazy, actually. And I'm going to go full disclosure. I am in perimenopause, Spence.
You are?
I am in perimenopause. How scary is that? Now, would you have guessed that?
Probably not, actually.
Why?
Well, okay. I would say, for me, it would be probably a compare and contrast thing.
Okay.
Because my wife has been perimenopausal for quite some time, and now she's going through full menopause.
Yeah.
However, comparing and contrasting her situation with your situation, you present as a... How can I say this without stumbling clumsily across a raft of
and statements? This is part of the problem, isn't
this
it?
Yeah, yeah. So when I say this, and I mean by no insult or anything like that, but you seem quite stable. You look after yourself.
Yeah.
So you are it's no secret that you're a gym bunny. Mm. You're in there all the time. You're doing your squats, lifting your weights, all this, that, and the other. You're very much concerned with your nutrition.
Yeah.
And not only your physical well-being, but your mental well-being. So I would not have... You've just thrown the skids under me there. I would never have said you were perimenopausal or presenting as such.
Okay. So that kind of leads into the second myth, which is there is an assumption that, you know, as well as that whole thing, it happens suddenly around age, like you say, that most people kind of report that if you ask them, like, what age that happens, they say usually late 40s into your mid-50s.
Yeah.
And actually, that then ties in with what you were saying, because there's a little bit about maybe the assumption of me not being old enough to be in that phase of my life either.
Yes, yeah.
And I think what people need to realise is some people go into perimenopause, or indeed menopause, in their 30s, depending on their medical situations. Now, for me, it is medical. I've suffered with something called endometriosis since I was probably 14, 15 years old, and it took probably 15, 20 years to even get that on my documentation in the doctors, because they, and for those of you who've got endometriosis that are listening, you'll probably feel my pain literally, because you go around in circles and they're convinced it's not that, and then they find out it is that. And for me, it then led to problems, well, problems my whole life with pain and managing pain, etc. But also down to when you come to conceive and you want to have children, there's a small a risk that that might not happen, or if it does, you get complications. And for me, it was like that. It was really hard to actually have a child. So I did have a child, so I feel very, very fortunate. However, I have had severe pain my entire life with this condition. And one of the things that they did say to me was that quite often that can be tied in with going into early perimenopause. So about 3 years ago, I started to get some really weird symptoms, which actually did tend to tie in with a stressful time in my life, I'm not going to lie, which is why it felt like I was going crazy. And I was going back and forth to the doctor with really, really weird symptoms. So some of it was severe anxiety attacks, which I, by the way, I still suffer from. I don't think everyone would kind of guess that about me, but from time to time I do. Severe like joint ache, like I am a gym bunny, but this was beyond what you'd ever expect. Like it felt like my elbows were going to fall off, you know. It was really horrific. Really bad migraines, chronic like tiredness, like I'd sit down after work, and I know we all have a bad day, but I'd literally, as soon as the dog sat on my lap, I was fast asleep, you know, and all these weird things. And I went to and from the doctor saying, look, I've got what we were going to talk about later called brain fog. I think I've got that as well. Doctors weren't very helpful, kept telling me to go away. Did a few hormone blood tests, said it wasn't that, which I was completely convinced that they weren't reading it correctly. And it probably took about 18 months. And then at one point, someone turned around to me and said, it might be fibromyalgia.
And oh, it just gets better.
And for me, it was like, oh, hang on a minute. So how have we gone from me telling you I think I'm in early perimenopause, and I really understand my body, because like you say, I'm very in tune with it, and then you tell me I've got fibromyalgia, which is essentially something that they use as a term when they can't give anything else a reason. So I was really upset about it, and then I finally got to talk to one person, just this one medical person, who was like, hang on a minute, explain this to me again, read my documents, read my blood tests, and said, you're in perimenopause. And I was like, well, how come so many people have said not? And she said, well, they haven't added everything together properly, and essentially, that's where you are. And I know this sounds weird, but I really did breathe a sigh of relief, because I was like, I am not crazy. I genuinely thought I was going mad. A lot of it was mental. For someone like me who likes to be in control of my life, and I do take control of my life, as you said, I eat well, because I've always had IBS because of my endometriosis, etc. I thought, you know, at least I understand now what's happening to me. And I think I did look at my age a little bit and go, it can't be that. But then looking at my medical history, yes, it can. And I've got a history in my family of problems like that. My sister, my mum, and I think my grandparents' side had problems as well. So I think the key thing to recognise here is it's not about it happens at a set time and that's it. It's not about age. The third thing is, some people think that it's all just about your reproductive organs. It is, but it isn't. It's also all those things I've just been saying there. Joints, bones, mental health, cardiovascular health, mood, weight, all those things all tied in. So it's not just the reproductive bits. Because quite often when you talk to a guy about it, they go, that's all down there, isn't it? It's like, no, it's not. It's really not. And I think, yeah, that hopefully that gives you a little bit of an indication as to, we can't judge it. It's different to everybody, you know. And then the last two that I've written down here for myths that tie into that is HRT is the main treatment. It isn't, yeah? So you just actually told whoever's listening today how I manage. I manage it through lifestyle, diet, exercise, alternative therapies and things that make me feel good. And it's very personal to all. When we get into, you know, perimenopause or menopause, some women do need to go on HRT, and that is their choice. And sometimes it's life-changing for people, but it's not the only option. And we do associate HRT with menopause, don't we, straight away. And then the last one that I wrote down was that some people assume that menopause is going to be exactly the same for everybody. That's totally not true. Everybody has a different experience. It's just the same as a woman having a menstrual cycle. Some women have a menstrual cycle and barely notice it's happening. Some are in extreme pain with it. menopause is very, very similar. You can talk to a whole room of women and it will show up differently.
Mm.
You know, perimenopause sometimes is worse than the menopause for some women, and there's a lot of research around that. And it's sometimes down to genetics as well and stuff like that. So five myths there, throwing a curveball in there by telling you that I'm in there as well.
Yeah.
I'm in the mix. Woohoo! I'm in the perimenopause club. Come on. It's very individual.
Yeah. So, okay. So I'm quite prepared to believe all those. I'm not prepared to believe all those myths.
Yes.
I'm prepared to believe that they are myths.
Yeah, yeah.
However, what's propagating those myths? Because for me, just looking on the outside, I mean, just as you were speaking there, I was listening to what you were saying, and there were certain things popping up in my head, like there's a really good documentary with Davina McCall on Channel 4.
Really good,
so I think that might actually answer a few of the procedural questions that you might have, if good listener.
Yeah.
Also, again, just on a sort of a sidetrack, I remember watching an interview with Naga Munchetti about endometriosis,
mm-hmm.
And her talking about the excruciating pain that she's been experiencing and being fobbed off with it by medical professionals and things like that. I do know that over the past few years she's always been quite active playing golf and things, but she's been really pursuing the exercise thing as a way to sort of manage it to a certain degree. But again, that's just managing it to a certain degree. That's not necessarily right, because I'll tell you a story a little bit later on, but the expectation of some people are, right, you've got a diagnosis, so here's a treatment, and you're fixed.
And pow,
there you go. Ah, there you go, we're fixed. All good now? No.
Oh my God, would that be amazing?
The next T2 Leadership Retreat will take place on the 7th to the 9th of May, 2024. To book your place on the Ultimate Leadership Development Experience from the People Performance People, or for more information, please visit www.trans2performance.com.
So between perimenopause and menopause, there's like so many different symptoms. And like I said, everybody is going to have a different set. Irregular cycles is your first thing. Sometimes, obviously, that's a giveaway for a lot of women going into one of those periods. Night sweats, hot flashes, suddenly just realizing that, you know, everybody else seems totally cool in the room and you're not, and then you feel very exposed as well, because it's quite obvious that you're, you know, suffering with that. Mood swings, I know we joke about that with women and their menstrual cycle, but this is sometimes throwing people into depression, you know, almost, and you know, it's pretty scary stuff, you know. Sleep disturbances, this is a big one, insomnia, and just going through periods of 2-3 nights of not sleeping. And of course, that then doesn't help some of the other symptoms as well. Weight fluctuation, usually a little bit on, but sometimes it can go the other way for women. Bone density changes, which I want to land on at some point, because you know my feeling on weightlifting and weight training. Cognitive changes, how that shows up in most people is brain fog. And that's sort of mental cloudiness and kind of, which can lead to frustration and disorientation, and sometimes that's made worse by that lack of sleep.
Yes. Can I just jump in there at that point? Because I recently had a situation where, I mean, I won't go into obviously no names, no companies, I'm not going to betray any confidences or anything like that. I won't even tell you the full story. However, we were working with somebody, an organisation, and working with a certain person in that organisation who had been in that organisation for quite some time, very experienced lady. However, she had been put on a personal improvement plan, professional improvement plan, because her work was dropping off a cliff a bit. So she was to do with finance and things like that. And obviously with finance, things have got to be right, haven't they?
Yeah.
For a long time, she was nailing it. And then suddenly she wasn't nailing it. Mm. So over a period of time, this was noticed, and she was put on this this improvement plan. And then she went to the doctors. Because she wasn't feeling right. There was a couple of other bits and pieces. Went to the doctors, bang, you're in menopause. Oh, right, okay, so you're in menopause. which, and as the doctor said, this is going to explain things like brain fogs that you have, because she was saying that as she was sitting there looking at the computer, numbers were swirling around, she was easily distracted, there was all sorts of things going on, and this was impacting on her work.
Yeah.
So, yes, we've got a diagnosis. The problem then was, well, twofold. Firstly, HR was involved in this improvement plan that she was on, but they continued to treat the menopause diagnosis and the lack of quality in her work as two separate things. When actually one was if you sit back and you go, right, I'm not surprised that the quality of her work's going down because she's experiencing brain fog because of the menopause.
Yeah.
So you can't treat them. They're not mutually exclusive. They're absolutely. And this was incredibly frustrating for her because she started turning around. She's thinking that, well, HR are thinking, well, yeah, I'm going through menopause, but they're also thinking I'm crap at my job, which is not right.
That's not right.
The second part of that bit is the fact that when she got a diagnosis, she was given some treatment. She was given a bit of time off work. And when she came back to work, HR went, so you're all fixed then? Yeah, all fixed. Yeah, you've got some pills, you've got something, it's all crack on then. Yeah. Well, actually, no, it's not that simple and straightforward.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and again, when we start talking about things like this, when we start talking about propagating those myths, if we're not talking about things, so if you're going through a period, if you've got defined or pretty sure that you've got menopausal symptoms, but you know, I'm not old enough, so it can't be. Well, actually, that's propagating the myth of you've got to be of a certain age.
Yeah.
But also, it's sort of thinking, it's driving you crazy because you're thinking, well, what's wrong with me then?
That's exactly
what's wrong with me.
Yeah.
Why am I like this? Because it can't be that, because this happens then. And so,
got to say, sometimes even the medical professionals cause that. You know, the amount of people I spoke to and was adamant of my symptoms and what it probably meant, to the point that I was completely convinced at one point that I'd got it all wrong, I was going mad, and that I had, you know, fibromyalgia. That led me down a path of, oh my God, you know, how can I control this, you know? And then it took for me to essentially put my foot down a little bit and say, no, I know my body better than you do. And then actually just get this one medical professional that just listened and went, you're right. And I've gone, okay, like, I don't always get it right. But for me, just that moment of not feeling crazy. And you're absolutely right. You can't then just click your fingers, take some, you know, people talk about HRT being this magic drug. And for some people, it really is. And that's just what they need. But for other women, particularly if you're perimenopausal and you're just starting to go through that transition, or, you know, sometimes it just doesn't agree with every individual and they like to do it more naturally. And so for me, I think the biggest thing is to think about the individual as an individual, because the journey through either of those phases is going to be completely different. How they deal with it emotionally, physically, it's going to be completely different. So in every organisation that I work with, I always say when we're talking about this subject is taking it as it is, talking about it and creating a safe space for that conversation to happen, but also look at everybody as an individual. So when you are having conversations with people who have got these symptoms or are going through a tough time, it's really about listening and picking up on what's making the big difference to them. So for some people, brain fog is one of those big things, you know. All of a sudden they've gone from, I don't know, the same time every day, because I noticed there was a bit of a pattern in me for a while that there was a certain point of day where it was worse. You know, as an example. So I know you go through your energy distribution cycle as a human and you know where your peaks and troughs are generally, don't you? But for me, that went out the window for a short while. I just didn't have control of. So I definitely wouldn't have been generating ideas around about that time of day. However, what I could do was other tasks that didn't involve as much cognitive work, if you like. So there's a whole heap, a raft of stuff there around what's personal to that individual. And what can you do to help? And I guess that's what we're here to talk about today, is a bit of an introduction. It's about some of the things that organisations can think about. For the individual, of course, the basic stuff helps, doesn't it? So you mentioned a couple of things that I use. So diet helps. You know, I've always been conscious of my diet because for me, it's important to control my stomach and the way I feel. But obviously, if you're controlling your diet, you've got anti-inflammatory benefits. You've got antioxidant protection, you've got good digestive health, and of course, you're going to get overall well-being. So some parts of that we can control as, you know, individuals. And of course, from a fitness perspective or the wellness perspective, because they're kind of separate things, for some people, if they've already been working out, they'll already understand the importance of kind of the bone health element. So you're more at risk of osteoporosis due to your estrogen levels dropping. So anything that's weight bearing is going to be really good for you, particularly if you're right at that point in your life where you're going through this kind of phase. So anything you could do to stimulate bone growth and maintain that density is really important. So even if you're just starting out, you know, I know there's this surge of women in weights at the moment, and I'm definitely an advocate for that. But there's more than one reason I do that. One is this. One is it gives me empowerment. And the third thing is it gets rid of all my frustration. So if you can think about all those perimenopause symptoms, weightlifting is really good for it. It's good for weight management, isn't it, as well, diet and exercise. Strong muscles, which means strong joint and health and stability, so it kind of controls your joints. And I was getting really bad joint. It was horrific. It's also good for cognitive health. So I always say this to people. People take the fitness bit and go, oh, it's fitness, and it's not. Sometimes it's the movement patterns that you go through. So when I used to treat patients to do fall avoidance and things when they were a little bit older, when I worked in kind of rehab circles, it would be around fall prevention and stuff. And it's kind of similar with this. It's like, how can you formulate cognitive kind of pathways, if you like, in the gym? You move a bar around, move a dumbbell around, it gives you something to work with.
Yeah.
And of course, that's going to then improve your quality of life as well. So they're the two simple things that we'll talk about in basics today. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to get the Project Y guys to help us a little bit with that.
Yeah.
And we're going to do some more in-depth conversations about how we deal with that. But for me today, I thought the point of just raising this conversation was probably the main focus of the podcast. But I thought, would it be a good idea, Spence, for us to have like 5 key takeaways for leadership teams or leaders just to start considering if they haven't already done it when it comes to this conversation?
I think that's what we do best at T2, is those takeaways. And I think if we've got 5 for the people out there, then definitely.
Brilliant. Okay, so the first thing that I think is important is education and awareness. So we're starting that today, right? But this is, you know, encouraging open conversations in workplaces to reduce stigma.
Yeah, I think we've got to be specific there. When we start talking about open conversations, we're not talking about judging people or berating people or anything like that.
Well, Sharon, are you on the menopause?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, we're not talking about that.
No.
Yeah. What we're trying to do is make people become more aware of the physical and emotional elements that women may face. So that sometimes is in self-education, sometimes it's in providing a forum for that. I was working with TransUnion recently, and they had a menopause board or something similar, and I thought it was a great idea. There was loads of open conversations going around, lots of men in the equation there as well, getting involved, which I thought was next level, and I'd love to see more of that. The next thing that I wrote down was flexibility and accommodation, because we do have to recognise the symptoms and how they might impact each individual, so productivity and well-being. So your point was perfect. You know, we can't look at one without the other. So we need to think about how we could make adjustments where we can, because it isn't a case of here's a tablet, it's fixed. It's going to be something you're going to live with for a while. And it doesn't make you invisible. Remember, we're not invisible. So we need to do something to make sure we accommodate that and hopefully help that person feel better about themselves, because they already feel rubbish. They already feel like they're letting you down. So don't make it worse. I put down wellness and health support. So within your organisation, do you provide anything that's kind of promoting a culture of well-being? So this is things like offering solutions that might help you address some of those symptoms. So what are you already providing? You know, do you have any additional support available that supports well-being initiatives within your organisation? Do you have people that can give advice, signposting, maybe even alternative treatments and things like that that you can signpost directly to? For some organisations, sorry, just battering the mic there, got quite violent. Not a symptom, by the way. For some organisations, have already got this covered. Like, they cover this within their sort of support plan, and that's amazing. And if you could do more of that, you know, that's next level. The last couple, so inclusive practices and policies. So review your policies to make sure that you are inclusive to those that may be affected by this. some of this stuff is obvious, some of it isn't. So I'm talking about things like certain types of leave, sickness, the allowances that you have, but also things like dress codes and access to toilets and things like that. It sounds really random, but some of those stuff you won't consider if you've not gone through it. So you need to take advice. And that leads into another point there is like, lean on people who've got this experience because they will tell you what is required and what hasn't been provided for them in the past. Make it safe for us to talk about it. That's what I would say. And then the last thing I put down, probably the most important thing, is leadership training. Because we've got to be involved in providing kind of solutions and safe places for people. So we need to provide education and training to help our leaders understand and support those going through this time in their life. Because it's hard. It is hard. And some of those leaders might be going through it themselves. And they need to feel that they can put their hand up and admit to that without the stigma.
Yeah.
So as I've just outlined to you, Spence, I can still stand up in a room and do all the stuff I want to do. Doesn't mean to say that I'm not going through some hard stuff sometimes. And I think we've got to remove the stigma and we've got to provide, you know, an open forum for discussion on this subject so that people can actually just, you know, be themselves, but also feel supported. It's a massive subject. We were never going to cover this in a podcast.
No.
So I look forward to digging into this a little bit more. And what I would really like is if there's any of our partners or the people listening to our podcast who have come up with some great solutions in their organisations or they've received great support, we want to hear from you because actually we'd really love to have some people on the podcast to talk about this in terms of the initiatives. And if there's anyone who'd like to talk about their experiences with perimenopause or menopause in the workplace, hit us up because we'd love to hear about it. And we're only going to remove the stigma if we really start to talk about it and be open. So yeah, thanks
Excellent.
For listening.
Yeah. So, well, thank you very much for that. So I think the first of many.
Yes.
This is not a standalone podcast. This
Definitely
is the
not.
First of many, but some really good points you make there. Dispelling those myths, looking for the five takeaways, making sure that we can start implementing them. But for the time, thank you very much, Tracy Roberts.
Thank you, Spence.
Really educational, really sort of eye-opening. And until the next time, we'll come back and do another T2 Hubcast. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye. Hi, listeners. I hope you enjoyed this episode of the T2 Hubcast. If you did, please consider leaving a 5-star review on your favourite podcasting platform. It only takes a minute and your feedback is greatly appreciated. Reviews help other people find the show and learn about the amazing topics we cover. Additionally, please turn on notifications so you never miss an episode. And finally, please subscribe or follow the T2 Hubcast if you haven't already. Doing this means that you'll automatically receive new episodes as soon as they're released. Thanks so much for your support.